John McKittrick started his career on the prairie back in 1953 in North Battleford at CJNB.
Correct.
And how did you get interested in becoming a broadcaster?
I was interested in journalism. My grandfather had a small town newspaper in Manitoba. I was going to go to university for journalism. Out of the blue, before I graduated from high school, the manager of the local small town radio station called, asked whether I would be interested in doing some summer relief. Many years later, I was still in radio.
How did he find out about you to track you down and offer you that job?
Well, I had done some voicing for a high school program, and he had heard it there, and he thought I might be interested. He thought I might be good enough, I guess, so gave me a shot.
Your first job at CJNB, what type of a job were you doing there?
Well, we were general announcers. In 53, we were still spinning the great big discs with some of the shows. Many of the shows, of course, were coming from the States, but more and more, it was getting to be live programming locally. We really didn't have news people. We would rip and read some stuff, eventually moved on into news.
And who was your news director at that time? Can you remember?
No. I don't think there was a news director.
Oh, so you were basically left on your own. Did you have a mentor there? Was there an older news person there?
Harry Decker was the manager of the station. Harry Decker was a big voice on the prairies. He had been a very big breakfast show type man in Saskatoon, and he moved to North Battleford as the manager, and he stayed on as the breakfast show man. He was tremendous. Terrific voice, terrific presentation, a real good mentor, I must say.
So he taught you the basics of the news business?
Not news, just broadcast. The news business, we picked up on our own.
You stayed at North Battleford
a couple of years, then I moved on to Moose Jaw. There, at CHAB in Moose Jaw, where there was, in fact, a pretty good newsroom, and I moved right into the news department. Well, no, I should clarify that. I did not. I first went as an announcer there. Did things like the women's show, 9 to noon, and I did a shot on Sundays called Sundays at Home that had soft music and poetry. But eventually I got into the newsroom there. That started the real career.
Can you remember some of the people you were working with?
There were the McManus brothers, for instance. McManus, the older, was the news director, who eventually moved on. And as a matter of fact, they then made me news director in Moose Jaw with about 1 year experience. And it was a very serious mistake. It was one of the greatest steps backwards. I was not ready for it at all. I struggled with that. I just didn't have the jam at that time to handle something like that. As a matter of fact, it convinced me forever not to be a news director.
How many people did you have on staff when you were a news director?
There would be about 8 to 10.
That's huge.
Yes, not bad at all.
See, CHAB had a lot of people go through there who later went on to greater things.
Yes, there were. Some great voices came out of Moose Jaw.
Then in 1957, after 2 years again, you moved on and came west.
Yes, I had the offer from NW. What happened is a longtime colleague, George Garrett, whom I met at CJNB, had come out to the coast. I came out for a visit. When I went back to Moose Jaw, one of the guys was at the front desk as I walked in the door of the radio station, and he said, "When are you going to NW?" And he had it down cold. I was coming out to NW.
At that time, they were still in New West?
Yes, they were.
Who was the news director when you went there?
Jim Cox. Jim was news director for quite a few years. He then went into sports, and it was taken over by Warren Barker. Warren Barker, to me, is an absolute legend. I think he was one of the greatest broadcasters ever seen in this country. He taught more people how to be good news people than anyone I've ever known. He was amazing.
When you went there and Warren hired you, who else was working in the newsroom at that time?
Oh, Al Davidson, for instance. There's a very colorful name. Al was actually in the newsroom. He eventually moved over to sports as well. Of course, Garrett was there. Maury Hesketh.
What was your job in the newsroom at that point?
Well, I started on the night shift, Monday through Friday, 2 to 10 was the night shift. I had that for several years. Eventually, though, I did move on in the Vancouver market. I had an offer from CKWX, and I went over there, and I worked there for a couple of years in the newsroom. It was a good place to work, but I didn't like my job. My job was strictly news broadcasting. I didn't write. I didn't like that. After a while, it became very frustrating to have someone else writing for you. I wanted to write my own. So when another opportunity came to go to Edmonton, I took it. And there I did my own thing.
At CJCA.
Correct.
Another one of the great radio stations on the prairies.
Yes, it was. Unfortunately.
It's gone?
It is gone.
Who was working there when you were there?
Well, my boss was Rutherford.
That would be Walt.
Walt Rutherford and his two sons got into broadcasting, and eventually they came out here, and I worked with both of the sons at CKNW. Now, Dave is a talk show host in Calgary. Doug is a manager in Edmonton.
Can you remember other people who were at CJCA at the time? The manager, the news director?
Dalt Helton, for instance. Dalt was manager, and he eventually came out to the coast as well. He was in quite a few different spots out in BC. Jim Hand was the breakfast man. Jim was quite a broadcaster with a morning show, and we were all shocked. He had a brain tumor. He didn't make it. And suddenly, the top broadcasting spot in the market was available. A lot of people were vying for it. Jim Holt, the man with the great voice, had a chance to take it over, but if I recall correctly, Jim didn't want to get up at that time of morning. So Jim didn't take it. So he could have had the best spot in broadcasting in Edmonton. He chose not to. Jim also moved out to the coast. You can still hear him on some commercials.
And he's doing some imaging, I believe, for one of the TV networks. He is. Global, I believe.
That's correct.
When you were working at CJCA, were you given an assigned shift, or were you basically moving all over the place?
No, I was early morning. I was, we'll call it 7 to 3 or something like that. Which, of course, as you know, as someone who's been in the industry himself, it doesn't start at 7. It starts about 5:30 because there's a lot of preparation.
So CJCA, that was until 1962. And then you came back to
CKNW.
Warren was, of course, still the news director.
Warren was now the news director. Yes, I couldn't wait to get back. I really liked the people in Edmonton. As a matter of fact, I married an Edmonton girl. We're still married, happily, I think. But it was an opportunity because, let's face it, NW was known for its incredible news, and Warren Barker had this great reputation as well. So I was glad to get the offer.
Well, we're moving into the what we call the glory years for CKNW. Untouchable ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could come near them. They hired the very best people they could find, and if they couldn't find them, they trained them.
Yes.
What was it like working for Warren in that era?
Working for Warren was a wonderful experience because he set such an example. Whenever you worked for Warren, you wanted to do something that he would be pleased with. And it's amazing how many times you would hear from beat reporters or people on the desk like myself that every time you wrote something, you would have the thought, would Warren write it this way? Would Warren like it this way? And it really did work. Warren set the example.
That time your job at CKNW was?
I had the 7 to 3 shift again, but I didn't do anything until, I wasn't on the air until 9 o'clock. Then I was assignment editor.
And there's a tough job.
Yes. Yeah. The first thing in the morning was to have a conference with the first beat reporter down at the police station. They would take the assignment list, type several copies, hand them out to the other beat reporters. That, of course, is the start for the day. Then throughout the day, you're interjecting, go here, go there, cancel this, etc., etc. But this was the building block for the day.
Now, Warren had many systems set up in the newsroom, and when I was there in the early 2000s, those systems were still in use.
Yes.
The future file, the back records, they were being slowly converted to computer, so everything was available at the touch of a keyboard.
Yes.
But all of that was there, and there was even some material that was moved forward every year that had Warren's handwriting. This is in 2002, I believe.
Right. And they're likely still there. You mentioned how the alumni at CKNW from that newsroom were always so close. I've just taken a phone call a few moments ago from someone else confirming that they will be coming to the Barker Bash in August, an annual get-together of the old alumni from the newsroom. No one misses it. We all come. We all have a great time, and it's one big gab fest.
So you were working, as I say, with a lot of great people, and over the period that you were there from 62 right through 1990, The staff really didn't change all that much. There were a lot of people who were there for the duration.
Very few changes. I think it really reflected well on the station and on Warren Barker and how he handled the newsroom. A lot of us had the attitude, why go anywhere else? What could be better than this? And it really was that way.
The business, of course, now has changed dramatically. I guess that started in the late 90s as far as CKNW goes.
And yes.
Its sister stations, when the ownership changed.
Correct.
The philosophy changed. And a lot of people were let go. Because as you and I know, running a radio station with people makes it very expensive. You can run one with a computer for very little money. But when you have people involved, especially good people, you have to spend a lot of money. But if you spend a lot of money and have a good product, people listen to it.
I think the key to the success there was it was almost like a family operation, kind of old-fashioned way to put it, but it was that way. They had initiated very early profit sharing, which was kind of neat, and it's that extra little bit of incentive. The staff know that we produce, we have a little more at the end of the year, and it really is an incentive. And it also makes you feel rather good that the company feels that you're worth having a little extra at the end of the year.
They were also one of the first corporations to bring in benefits, I believe, for
yes.
the staff.
Mm-hmm. Staff benefits, the medical, you mean, such as, mm-hmm. yes, that's right.
Some of the people you were working with during that couple of decades, there were some big names there as well as you.
I was a small fish, I'm afraid, compared to a lot of them.
Not if you stayed there that long. Obviously, you were doing something right and they were happy with your performance. But who else was there that you can remember?
Well, there are some have moved on to television or are still working today, such as Bill Puri. Doriana Temelo is in production. Yvonne Emore has been into CBC television and in radio right now. All very capable women. Some of the first women in the business and all really tremendous workers. Some of the other people, John McCombs still on the air, doing a talk show, etc. Gord MacDonald is still there. Of course, Jack Benest was another guy who moved to the interior and has been very instrumental in keeping some of the old facts and figures together.
John Ashbridge, another person
you worked
with.
Mm-hmm.
There were many, many more.
Oh, dozens and dozens.
George Garrett. Tell me a little bit about George.
Well, George and I are personal friends still. We still golf together and chum around together all the time. We became instant friends when I joined the staff in North Battleford. George had already been in the business for a year. He preceded me out here. George became the senior beat reporter. He replaced Mark Raines as senior reporter. Mark went on to politics. He was in Ottawa for some years. So George and I have always gotten along very well. We kind of understood each other from the newsroom side as well.
He's been referred to as the reporter's reporter.
Okay.
I've heard that from many of the people I've talked with. They hold him up as an example of probably one of the best beat reporters in the business.
Yep.
He got a lot of exclusive stories.
He did. Sometimes you accuse him of having a horseshoe in the right place, but George really calculated. He also was so personable. He was the boy next door. People liked to talk to George. People trusted George. And that word trust was huge, huge. Whether it was a police officer or a union leader or a politician, they knew they could trust him. And I hope they felt they could trust our newsroom as well. Again, that was so important to us.
Part of the station's success.
Yes, it was. And I think it's nice to hear someone say that because Bill Hughes was the manager and Bill had the idea. And Bill was one of the first managers around, I think, to have the idea that the newsroom can carry a lot of clout. Salesmen will say the newscast didn't really pay the salaries of all those people in the newsroom. But Bill would say something slightly different, such as they start our hour. Or they start our half hour. People are tuning in for the news. Then we have the disc jockeys to carry on that audience. But the big start of every hour is that newscast. It worked.
You were basically the assignment editor for most of your time there, or all of your time there?
For a good part of it, yes.
And what was that like dealing with all of these big personalities that you were doing assignments with? Did you ever get into any arguments or battles with any of these people, especially when you would change their set routine by saying, I'm scrapping that, you have to go there?
No battles, no. Not at all. I think everyone respected the fact that we're trying to work together and do the best thing for the station. We might have a disagreement now and then. No real battles, but I'm afraid I was known as a bit of an old ogre. No doubt about it. An old grump at times and very demanding, etc., etc., etc. But we're still friends.
You have a lot of respect from your coworkers.
I hope
one
so.
One thing I've heard, and I'm sure it's true. What would have been your most hectic day there when something big happened and you had to basically move the figures around the chessboard?
Well, I would say that the most frustrating day, would you like to hear that one?
That would be good.
It was the day that Pierre Trudeau was married. Barry McMaster was my mate on the desk. We had what we called the pilot and co-pilot desk.
Still in existence.
Yes. Barry McMaster and I had a news tip from a little girl that Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau was getting married on the North Shore. And this little girl said she knew this because her big sister was going to the reception. So we started trying to confirm this because Trudeau, of course, was in his 50s, was a known confirmed bachelor. He had been with many women over the years, and there were great stories about Pierre and his romances, etc., etc. It was hard to believe. And when we got our Ottawa Bureau into it, we checked virtually every Liberal MLA on the planet, and not one of them knew about it, except there were a couple who weren't there, and we couldn't find them, and they were at the reception. But it was a bombshell, and the killer was we didn't confirm it in time. Finally, there was a release to Canadian press. So we all got it at the same time. But we could have had that hours earlier. We could not confirm it. We scoured the North Shore. Well, I can't imagine going on the air and announcing that the Prime Minister has been married when it's not true.
Back in the day, we checked facts.
Yes.
And if we had two sources, that was okay, but we really wanted to get a third.
It'd be nice to have a cabinet minister confirm it for us.
Rock solid before you right. go on the air with it.
Yes, that's right.
In 1990, after your very long 28-year run at CKNW, did you decide to retire, or were changes being made by management, or what was the reason behind your decision to leave there?
I decided to retire. I was feeling a bit worn out. I was burned out. Well, frankly, I can tell you a little inside. I was starting to have backaches sitting at the desk. About 1 o'clock every afternoon, I just started. Then I went on vacation. Everything's 100%. Went back and started getting these backaches again. So we have a spot down at Birch Bay, Washington, the wife and I, and from the front gate to our trailer, we decided I was retiring. So I retired. It was early retirement. I have now been retired almost 20 years. Do I miss it? Sometimes. I miss the people more than anything at all. What was really good, out of the blue, I was asked to take a night school class, an introductory class to broadcast journalism at BCIT. I was shocked. I said I don't have any teaching experience. All they wanted was my experience in the industry. Frankly, I did it for 10 years, and I really liked it. I well remember when we first introduced women in the newsroom. Quite a few years ago. That's a long time ago, as a matter of fact. I used to get a lot of the abusive calls coming in. People didn't like it. Almost every single call was from a woman. Women did not like hearing women on the news. But they survived. They did very well.
There were some, as you say, many great women with many great voices who did fantastic work. And look at our national TV networks now. The new anchors on two of the three are going to be women.
I'll tell you one of the great things about the teaching at BCIT, if we can call it that, for a night school class once a week. They allowed me to write my own course. It was a lot of work, but it was very satisfying in that I felt there wasn't enough of the students, more of their involvement by them rather than me. Seemed to work well. I think quite a bit of it is still going on there.
If you won millions of dollars and were 20 years younger and you wanted to buy a radio station, what would you do with it? How would you run a radio station today? What would be your idea of something that people would want to listen to?
Mike, I have absolutely no idea. I would not want to be faced with such a thing. Frankly, I think I'd rather put it in government bonds or something, because it is such a risky business now. One time it was known as an avenue for printing money. Nowadays, it is kind of risky. Stations are not functioning the way they were before. They're retiring people early. They're laying off staff. They're not paying the way they used to. I don't know. It's a struggle. It's a struggle for all media. I was shocked this last year to hear newspapers like Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, two of the biggest papers in the States, are having trouble. Yes, the internet is taking a lot. Television, of course, has taken an awful lot of the print media's listenership or readership. I don't know where the future goes. I really wouldn't want to be faced with that, frankly.
That's a good answer.
Nice of you to offer me a million.
I was thinking several million.
Yeah,
I think
hope
a million would do it these
Not
days.
Not quite.
What was your favorite moment in your radio career?
I'd say one of my greatest successes in the career would be the day that JFK was shot. Because I was in Edmonton then, I was almost finished my shift. It was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon when the word came across the wire. I left the microphone after six. I never left it. People were feeding me the information as it came in. I felt good after that day. It was a long, long day. I was really beat because I had started at about 5 o'clock in the morning. But it was a big day for me. I was glad to be able to say I was able to handle it. And I hope it was handled well, but it was handled anyway.
Who stands out the most in your career?
Well, I keep lauding Warren Barker, but he really was. He was a tremendous leader. What everyone liked about Warren is that he did it by example. He didn't just throw orders around. Warren, I don't know if you've ever heard of his hours, his working hours. They were unbelievable. He started at about midnight and went home about 1 p.m. And he worked the first few hours on the desk himself. And he prepared right up to the 8 o'clock news in the morning. You couldn't help but admire him. He was a workaholic. He was always so fair. Always fair. You might dread the thought of a Barker memo sometime when he was not too pleased with something, but it didn't last. Joke about that was always you knew if you were top of the wrath, if you got the page that had little holes punched in it by the typewriter. Which was, of course, we were still on typewriters then. If there were no holes in the paper, you were farther down the list for getting the memo, so that was okay.
Does John McKittrick listen to any radio anymore?
Not an awful lot. I tune in the news at NW. Not an awful lot of other stuff. No, I must say.
John McKittrick, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Mike. I am flattered you would want to talk to me. I had a wonderful career in broadcasting, and I do appreciate hearing from you.